You're listening to 89.9 WERU FM Community Radio. My name is Tressa Versteeg, and this hour I'm bringing you special programming about a project called The Village Canoe. It's a one-of-a-kind canoe expedition and art residency. This weekend, September 27, 28, and 29, The Village Canoe is having a free pop-up exhibition at Highwater Arts in Belfast, inspired by the inaugural voyage that took place at the end of August. I followed the Village Canoe on its expedition down Penobscot waters, and so in this hour, you'll meet the artists and hear stories from their journey. These stories will be followed by an interview with the Village Canoe's creator, Chris Battaglia. So let's jump right in and get on the water with the Village Canoe.
So the Village Canoe is a floating artist residency, 10 artists paddling two 30-foot canoes from Bangor to Brooklyn, and follow-up art show.
This is Chris Battaglia, founder of the Village Canoe. He's an artist and documentarian living in Swanville, Maine. Chris is a person who dreams big and also has the ambition to make his wild ideas a reality. The Village Canoe is inspired by another canoe trip Chris took a few years ago, with artists going down the Mississippi River into the Gulf of Mexico. Since then, he has always wanted to pursue another river-to-sea expedition with creative thinkers while engaging with local communities and ecosystems. So, he put out an open call for artists and began plotting this venture. In late August, after 9 months of planning, the selected artists arrived. They came from all around Maine, as well as Massachusetts, Minneapolis, and as far away as northern Scotland.
My name is Willow Wildheart, and I am a puppeteer.
I'm Paige Spate. I am a oil painter.
My name is Gabby Schultz. I'm a cartoonist.
I'm Allie Reed, and I make mostly embroidery work and some printmaking.
So I'm Alex Hackett. I'm an artist, writer, and anthropic astronomer.
My name is Chloe Dubois, and I am a mixed media sculptor and maker.
My name is Brian Wasser. I'm a photographer.
My name is Sam Costello. I went back to school to get my art teaching certificate, and I really enjoy painting.
I'm Matea Mills Andrup, and I'm a dancer.
So my name is Amanda Kidd Shaw, and I'm a printmaker.
On Friday, August 23rd, the group gathered at Nambizan, a reclaimed site of sacred Wabanaki land, to learn about the Wabanaki people and the history of the land. The next morning, the Village Canoe traveled to the Penobscot Salmon Club in Brewer, where they united with two Voyager canoes, 28 and 32 feet long, that would be their homes for the next 10 days. There were supplies strewn all over the beach.
Looking at the pile of stuff here, what's in all of those bags?
Oh my gosh. A bunch of clothes, tent, some first aid stuff, cameras. Yeah, I have a big box of cameras. Hopefully that stays waterproof. A bunch of water, a bunch of food. There is a lot of stuff here, and I am wondering if it'll all fit.
We are trying to fit this ice in this cooler with all the food. We've got some like loose radishes and turnips. There's also mushrooms.
These, I think.
The boats were carried down the hill, taking nearly the entire group's strength.
Boost the morale seeing these canoes in the real world.
Yeah.
Ready to get in.
I just feel like so hopeful right now. Like,
I don't know, I'm just excited to be here with like people who love canoeing or and the outdoors and art. And it's like, I didn't think these people existed before. I feel like it's kind of like magic or something, you know?
Oh, well, the other thing I want to do is be in the water as much as possible and just really like experience the sensation of and the gift of being out in the elements for 10 days. And so really embodying the water, the flow, the movement, what it feels like to be carried and held by it, what it is to be in it.
Yeah, how do you feel about cold water?
Well, it's invigorating.
Yeah.
Eventually, the boats were loaded, charts were checked, and the canoes carried into the water. the village canoe was not just a dream anymore.
We launched on Saturday the 24th from the Penobscot Salmon Club in Brewer, camped that night in Orrington, camped at Porcupine Island Sunday night.
The first 3 days, the village canoe was joined by main guide Nancy Zane. These days were spent figuring out how to move safely, communicate with each other, and finding a daily rhythm.
We wake up according to the tide, and that determines when we get our start, and then we have breakfast, break camp, move the boats into the water, pack up the canoes, and then we paddle for a couple hours, find a place to have lunch, and then get back into the canoes, do the whole packing, unpacking thing again, and then paddle to the place where we set up camp. And then we have, at night, two artists a night present about their art. We have had some moments to, you know, take some photographs, walk around, and there's just like these little pockets, these little moments that if you feel inspired, you can sort of make a little work. Mm-hmm. It's more idea incubation.
And then Monday we went from Porcupine all the way down to Wadsworth Cove, just above Castine, dropped off our guide Nancy, and then that evening camped at Ram Island, and the next morning paddled around Holbrook Sanctuary, the Holbrook Island Sanctuary, had lunch at the Good Life Center, and paddled around Brookville, Cape Rozier, and camped at Bakeman Cove that evening, weatherbound by the winds.
On the following Tuesday, I found their camp on Cape Rozier under a setting sun.
Whoa, dinner time.
What do we got?
We have pasta with red sauce and...
Over dinner, there was a lot of talk about the change in water as they transitioned from river to ocean. The canoes and the artists were tested.
Today was like the hairiest day we've had so far with the wind. We had some gusts like 10 to 15 maybe, with some upper to 20 maybe. We had some like white caps on the water, and we're struggling a little bit with that in such... in canoes that are designed for lakes and rivers.
As the stars came out and tea was made over the fire, we started the evening ritual of artist presentations.
I guess while we're getting started, I can pass these around. So, these four canvases are going to be, I'm starting them. I have six of them, one for the first 6 days that we're on this trip, and then the last 2 days that we're on the trip, I'm going to go back and kind of finish them up or like add some new ideas.
And reflecting on the day.
That was so fun going into those waves with everybody, and like everybody being at different levels, and just like, I just felt like I was just having the best time, and I just felt like I was at home, and just like, I totally just like was like, yo, I got Brian in the back and Matea, they had it all under control.
Every time we were like gonna go pitch into one of those waves, I was like, oh dear. I had this moment that I was like trying to keep in because like I felt like the conditions weren't bad, but like, that I just like, there was like that moment where I didn't know what the canoe could do, and yeah. And so I'm like really grateful that the canoe has so far been like such a safe vessel for us. And
I think my challenge was just having to trust other people completely, really. And a highlight is probably feeling my hair getting this kind of build up of salt in it.
Yeah.
Which feels really good.
On Wednesday morning, set out super early, I think it was 6 in the morning, 6:30, for Pond Island, a straight shot, and we camped at Pond Island, part of the Maine Coast Heritage Trust. We camped on Pond for 2 days.
On Pond Island, there was a chance to be still, a shift in pace and purpose.
It was kind of nice to have a little bit of a change, because it seemed like for the first several days at least we were always on the go, and there was never really any time to kind of settle in. And Pond Island was the first island that I felt like I really got to know a little bit. The first place I was able to actually walk the perimeter in its entirety and kind of get to know the personality of the island. A lot of my photography is based in this desire for me to kind of connect with place. on a little bit of a deeper level, which takes a little bit of time.
I did an hour-long workshop with a good amount of the group, because that's really the point, or like one of the points of dancing for me, is the facilitation and the rehearsals and the like interaction with groups and like getting people moving in whatever way that is for them. Like, I'm all for stillness, you know, like if someone just needs to sit down, that's fine. I also collected all these crabs and had these crabs as like an audience for the people who were performing, because it was sort of like, how do we dance in this place to like beings of this place?
And on Friday morning, paddled through Bucks Harbor, across to the Reach, paddled down the Reach, stopped at Little Deer Isle at the bridge, made the crossing across Egemogen Reach on Friday afternoon, camped at Hog Island Friday and Saturday, and then paddled a short 20-30 minute paddle from Hog Island to the Wooden Boat School on Sunday, the final day of our trip, and ended at the Wooden Boat School.
During their last stretch in the Egemogen Reach, I met up with the group for a final time. Everyone had sun-touched cheeks and windblown hair. They seemed at ease. Though there was little time to actually make art during the residency, the trip provided meaningful time, place, and community, from soaking in the natural world to engaging with artists in ways that can be hard to find in the regular world.
Make mostly embroidery work and some printmaking stuff, and have a practice that starts often with bird watching. And so, yeah, the chance to be like out on the water in a different way than I had been previously, and to be out with people with lots of different levels of experience, all there with the goal to make work, was what was interesting.
How's the bird watching been?
A lot of eagles and ospreys, and kind of watching it change day to day, like little by little as we get closer and closer to the ocean, has been really exciting.
I suppose like kind of water and land and our relationship with those kind of, you know, with seascapes and landscapes is a part of my practice. So it's kind of doing the research investigations that inform my practice from a very different perspective.
My art, I think, is about my relationship to nature and kind of environmental degradation and ecological destruction. Making art for me is kind of about trying to maintain a positive connection to nature and hopefully one day like make a difference and moving forward as a human. And
take it as it comes. I'm old, man. I got time for paddling or drawing, but not both. I need a nap. It's been great. It's been, I guess that a lot of folks have been saying that we thought it was going to be a lot of very, you know, deep and meaningful reflections upon still waters as we ink our watercolor our, you know, like landscapes. But the reality is it's not so much about the environment, but as it is about the people that we're with in the environment. I'm surprised at how rare that is, that a bunch of artists can have a reason to just talk a whole lot about art and, you know, our lived experience while not feeling guilty about not having doing more art or going to our 80-hour a week jobs. So I think that's ingenious. I think it's a great way to have a residency, because you can't go hide in your room. You're on a boat together all day.
We as a group, you know, came in kind of with an unknown of what will that balance be and what is the expectation of the residency part, but also the movement part and the safety part and the food part, and what is the expectation of creating now or later, collaborating or not. And so it's been a pretty organic process. I take a lot of inspiration from the water moving us and how we are sometimes with the current, with the tide, or against the tide, and what is it when a speedboat comes moving past and we catch its wake, or, you know, kind of noticing those elements within the dynamics of the group and figuring out how do we get back on that flow in the boat together.
Paddles forward. Thank you.
You're listening to WERU 89.9 FM. My name is Tressa Versteeg, and this hour we're bringing you special programming about the Village Canoe, an artist residency and canoe expedition. You just heard stories from their inaugural voyage from Brewer to Brooklyn. This weekend, there will be a pop-up exhibition at High Water Arts in Belfast, displaying work created during and inspired by the journey, as well as workshops and performances. The remainder of the program is an interview with the Village Canoe's creator, Chris Battaglia, explaining the project's inception and all the behind-the-scenes work it took to pull this residency off.
So what is Village Canoe?
So the Village Canoe simply is a floating, or it's a, okay, so the Village Canoe is an artist residency and follow-up art show. And that's it. It sounds simple, but of course made it not so simple. The way that it developed was me trying to develop a new type of artist residency that happens from a canoe. And a month after the residency experience, we have a pop-up art show in an outdoor place. I guess that's the theme is the outdoors, and the premise is get a bunch of people in one space, in one place, have an experience, and then have an art show based on that experience. And so that's, so this year, the Village Canoe is was a canoe trip from Bangor to Brooklyn with 10 artists paddling two 30-foot canoes.
Was it 10?
10 artists.
I thought it was 11. 11 with you.
11 with me. Okay. Yeah, yeah. And so it was 10 artists, myself, and a main guide who came on the trip for about 3 days with us. We actually began the program at Nabizin, in the Greenbush Passadumkeag area on Friday night, August 23rd. We had a big dinner, everyone made introductions, and we stayed the night and heard some stories from the caretaker Stan Neptune and the folks from In Kinship Fellowship and the Open Waters program, Jenny Hahn and Lila, come and give a little presentation on their project. It's a little bit ancillary, but so we started in Nabizin on Friday the 23rd, and we woke up the next morning and launched from the Penobscot Salmon Club in Brewer alongside the Penobscot Paddle and Chowder Society and the Natural Resources Council of Maine celebrating their 50th and 60th anniversaries respectively. And we launched about 11:30 in the morning on Saturday the 24th. We paddled on the Penobscot River through Hamden, Winterport, and Campton Orrington at what was the old gravel quarry. And the next morning on Sunday, we woke up and embarked from Orrington down to Bucksport. We stayed in Bucksport for a couple of hours waiting for the tide so that we could catch the Penobscot River at a high enough tide to land at Porcupine Island, which is just on the west side of Verona Island. So we camped on Porcupine Island, in beautiful little back channel of the river, almost still water, that night on Sunday. And then on Monday, the 26th, we paddled early morning from Porcupine Island all the way down into Penobscot Bay alongside Stockton Springs and, you know, on the end of the main stem of the Penobscot River, on the east side of the river turning into the bay. We had, I forget it was like Wadsworth Cove is the name of it. We pulled off at a cove and we dropped off Nancy Zane, who was our guide of North Star Adventures, and embarked the rest of us, just 11 of us, in two canoes. We got to Castine and made the crossing and camped at Ram Island on that Monday evening, which is, yeah, part of the Maine Coast Heritage Trust. And then we stayed there a night. We went and had lunch at the Good Life Center the next day, paddling now kind of in the bay, and camped at Cape Rozier that evening on Tuesday, where we made our first full like exposure in the bay. Lots of winds and seas and like probably the most harrowing and adrenaline-filled paddling day. And then we camped on, and then we set out early the next morning because we got weatherbound at Cape Rozier because of the winds. And then we camped at Pond Island on Wednesday and Thursday. And then we crossed through Bucks Harbor and into Egamoggan Reach, and on Friday, after paddling through the reach, made it to Hog Island and camped on Hog Island in Penobscot Bay Friday and Saturday night, and we paddled on Sunday, September 1st, the short 20-minute paddle from Hog Island to the Wooden Boat School in Brooklyn, completing the trip.
And that was
on Sunday. On Sunday, so our final day of paddle, we left a really easy, an easy day. But yeah, we ended up spending, I guess that was four different islands on the main island trail that are stewarded by MIDA and or the Maine Coast Heritage Trust, and one night on the riverbank in Orrington.
I guess one thing people might be wondering is, like, you could choose to canoe so many lakes in Maine. There's so much paddling that happens in northern Maine. Like, why did you choose this area to have this residency in?
I chose this area for multiple reasons. For one, I'm actually not, by hobby or craft, I'm not a paddler. It took a 2-month trip on the Mississippi to understand why I liked, or understand that I liked canoeing. And what I think inspired this residency, and that we didn't paddle on the West Branch or the East Branch, or famous lakes, ponds, and all the quiet water that canoeing is so known for, or of course whitewater too, was because when I was on the expedition that paddled in the Mississippi from St. Louis to the Gulf, we dumped out into the ocean, and I thought there was something really special about going from the interior out, and there was so much I learned about the country and the geography, the ecology, and for some reason, I don't know if it was a cathartic feeling or maybe it's just because I grew up in on the ocean, on the West Coast, but there's something, I feel really tied to the ocean, and I don't necessarily feel tied to rivers in that same way. Like, I don't need to be on the most lush, quiet area. And when this project was calling to me, and I thought about going from the interior to the ocean, just like we did on the Mississippi, how can I create a similar experience that I felt in 2017 for other people here in Maine? I thought the Penobscot was both perfect because I not only lived in Belfast, but it had important cultural and history, cultural and historical elements, and important to the state. But there's a ton of industry along the Penobscot from Bangor all the way down, which is, of course, it's tidal all the way up to Bangor. So we're passing by power plants and water treatment plants, and there's all this lore of, and in fact, of mercury deposits and whatever poisoning runoff. And so I thought it paralleled so too perfectly the Mississippi experience with all the industry and battling this internal struggle of, like, finding nature and trying to understand the balance between wilderness and industry, and the fact that they're not, you know, they're inextricably linked, and everything is, you know, for the most part, everything is, like, man-made and I don't know. I guess the best way to put it is that you can't just turn your back to these parts, like these tidal rivers that go out to sea, because there's industry or there's a bunch of tourism or marinas or whatever it is. I mean, as we're paddling on that first day, going by all the industry and the power plants and water treatment facilities, it's not ugly, you know. It's not wilderness. It's just one part of the landscape. And so I felt like the Penobscot mirrored my experience of the Mississippi River. And so I just did what I knew.
And then why not just do? Why wasn't it just a canoe trip? Why make it also an artist residency?
That's easy because it couldn't be just a canoe trip because I'm not just a canoer, and when I think about the experience that I had on the Mississippi, it was enriched by being surrounded by other artists, writers and painters and makers, and when I looked at a lot of the found items and, you know, like trash, like barge ropes and defunct birds' nests made of barge rope and extracting clay from the Mississippi mud that could be maybe made into sculpture or ceramics, and watercolor painting every day, photographing every day, writing every day. I thought there was an incredible opportunity to put a bunch of people who didn't know that they could or should continue their practice outside. I thought if I wanted to do it, then I'm sure other people would. And when thinking about how to make a similar experience, or, you know, cultivate a similar experience here in Maine, it was the platform, like the Kindling Fund was the platform that encouraged me to think about programming versus just, you know, it's not just about trying to build a big canoe and trying to recreate that experience on the Mississippi. It was trying to create a platform and grow a community from what would be now this artist residency program. And so if I could develop a way to, yeah, create a program, I thought, oh, the residency, this is functionally, it's an artist residency. It's also, you know, to some people it's camp, to some people it's a retreat, to some people it's vacation, but all in all, it was a residency experience where you lived on the water for 8 days. And I thought that it was like the living on water, living in these pared down fundamental expressions of everyday life, that was the thing that would, it got me, so I imagine it would get other people.
Cool. Can you describe the canoes that you took and like where they came from? And
Initially the goal was to try and find enough funding and time to build a 30-foot canoe, but when I was in talks early on in January of forming of the project, there was one guy, David Tannhauser, who started the Penobscot River Paddling Trail with his partner Chloe Chun. We had a meeting and he said, what are you going to do for paddling, or what are you going to do about the canoes? And I said, I don't know, I guess I'm going to try and find a couple of big canoes. And he said, well, you should talk with Mike Mayberry of a brewer. And he said, you probably heard of him though. And I said, no, I haven't. And he said, well, Mike Mayberry leads the Penobscot River organization, or Penobscot River Keepers, with his wife BJ. And they're at a brewer and they take Boy Scout troops and school groups in war canoes that he built. And so, of course, interest peaked, and they were in Florida at the time and they got back in March or April, and I phoned them and asked to hire the canoes. And so Mike Mayberry, over the past 10, 20 years, built these 28-foot long fiberglass canoes, and there's about 12 seats in each canoe, and he takes out school groups and adults and paddles on the Penobscot, just simple paddles between Brewer and Orrington or Old Town, and they take the canoes all over the state. And so we had one of his 28 footers and a 31 footer that he actually built for he and his wife and a few friends to go canoeing on the Allegash and expeditioning and you know, taking fully loaded all their gear. But it turns out he didn't really end up using it in that way, and these canoes have been sitting around. So I went and I met him, and he said, yeah, that canoe and that his 31 footer and 28 footer are sitting on this one trailer that he built himself in the back of his property in Brewer. And he's like, yeah, I don't really use those that much. And so he said, you could take them. And so ultimately Mike Mayberry, he built these canoes, and actually the 31 footer is a 28 foot canoe of the same mold that he had built his 8 other canoes with. And then he added, he gave it about 6 inches rocker in the bow and the stern, and just elongated it at the end. So it's functionally, it's the same design, just like, just literally stretched out. And he calls it the banana boat. It's a big white 31-foot canoe that was meant to work on the Allegash as a expedition workhorse for he and 6 other adults. But that has 14 seats, and that's what we took, the 31 footer and a 28 footer from his fleet of like 8 war canoes, I think. But yeah, he's got over 10 canoes that he's built in this 28 foot plus range.
Wow.
So, and they're all sitting on his property in Brewer because he takes, yeah, tons of kids and adults out. I think on the day that we launched, they had 60 people committed through the Paddle and Chowder Society and NRCM. So we were lucky actually to take out those canoes, because that week he had said that, you know, we have expectations of over 80 people planned to come to this thing. And I thought, oh my gosh, this trip, this thing that we've been planning for like 9 months and arranged, you know, since April, could get delayed a day, everything's going to fall apart. And then luckily he saved the day, and he said, as long as we switch out two of these, you know, these two specific canoes, you can still take them. And so we were able to launch at the same time, and it was all good. So he was incredibly accommodating and, yeah, loaned us for 10 days, these canoes. And he loaned it and actually did a sea trial on the Pisagasawakig in Belfast with a couple of folks from Come Boating organization. And our curator, Emily, she, I think there were six of us that paddled a big canoe. And it was almost pointless, actually, because there's nothing like paddling the 30-foot canoe in 2-foot seas with 10 to 15 mile an hour winds gusting to 20 versus a calm day in the Passy in Belfast. Fully empty boat with not as many people as we would have taken. So it was like a horrible sea trial by all accounts, but it was amazing to see what this boat was like, and see how many people it took to lift it off the trailer. You know, it takes at least 6 people to lift this 250 pound canoe empty.
Yeah, I was quite impressed. Yeah. Seeing them being carried down the hill by like all these people.
Yeah.
It's like it doesn't have any stuff in it.
Yeah,
yet.
I know. You have to portage. You have to remove all the gear every time we lifted it up. And of course, the tide posed those problems as well, or something, just a new factor to think about. We couldn't just, it wasn't always soft sand that we could just, you know, shove the canoe up and tie it up to a tree and not worry about it. We had to, sometimes we even had to like pull the canoes, you know, 50 yards from the mud flats in Cape Rozier or on Hog Island. And then we had to even wedge them in the forest so that they were totally off the sand. The high tide came up at Hog Island all the way on the backside to the trees. And so, yeah, we got creative, but it wasn't ideal and it was very heavy. But I think it fostered that like community team element that was so important to this trip. So it wasn't just a canoe trip and it wasn't just an art trip. And in that, the collaboration and teamwork and almost just the camaraderie or solidarity that came behind, you know, not wanting to lift up the heavy cooler or not wanting to be a part of the train of 10 people to lift one canoe across mud flats and shells and rocks and less than ideal conditions. But we did it, and I think by the end there was no begrudging sentiment and people got it.
You're listening to 89.9 FM WERU.
Can you talk about the transformation of the group from sort of beginning to end?
Yeah, there was definitely something that happened. And in the beginning, of course, just like most of these scenarios where no one knows each other, introductions are plain, they're kind of factual and humbly stated and restrained. And that started in Ibizan when we're just doing introductions around the dinner table. Everyone's comfortable and we had really positively social people. And I think I noticed early on that the group was wildly communicative and very emotionally and intellectually strong. And so there was a sentiment, you know, I kind of felt as I was trying to get my sea legs and trying to understand how to run this trip and how to lead this canoe trip and how to lead this art program and to do it in tandem with a guide for a few days and then also in tandem with 10 other adults. I noticed that there was like a little bit of a reserved feeling in that first 24, 48 hours. And it wasn't until we got to Porcupine Island after there was 48 hours of just stewing with the project and understanding how I operate and how this trip was going to operate that a few people had been having side conversations. And it turns out that everyone wanted to air all this to the group in a very, sensible group dialogue. And so we had this summit that Matea, one of the artists on the trip who loves facilitating conversation and just being a facilitator, I asked her to, and she facilitated what a lot of people had been talking to her about and talking to each other about. And it turns out that we have an incredibly empathic and thoughtful group of 10 people who were trying to figure out their own personal focus, our focus for the group. They wanted me to help hone my confidence and in saying like, we're going to do this today, or we're going to paddle this route, or we're going to do this art program, or whatever it was, just all these elements that were on my mind, but didn't come to light until everyone in their own voice said what they were thinking. And it was this beautiful night that actually I think changed the course of the entire trip, insofar that the next 5, 6, or like the next 7 days, Monday through Sunday, Everyone got incredibly close. There were all these, you know, duos and trios and splitting off and chatting with one another and spending either lots of time in deep conversation or everyone around the fire and laughing a bunch. And it seemed from that moment, there were some, you know, there were some emotions, some high emotions, and there were lots of laughter and tears throughout the trip, you know, like positive, you know. I remember one of the artists, she was like, Chris, and she's crying, and she's like, how did you do this? How did you make such an amazing group of people? And I'm like feeling this, you know, it's such a pivotal time, this transformation in my art, and I, you know, like I need to like recalibrate my life. I don't know, in different words, there was many mentions of like, why, how is this so good? How are these feelings so rich? And so, over then from Monday through Saturday, you know, everyone then didn't want to leave. And it was that sentiment of like not wanting to go back to real lives and having such a strong galvanized experience with one another that by the end there was definitely less or no complaining about the weight of the outfit and the canoes, and you know, people were willing to take a little bit of extra time, like for instance before we got to the wooden boat school, to you know, take some group photos, and I could fly the drone for 10 minutes in a way that provided us some extra imagery. But yeah, I don't know, the levity by the end was, it was so, people had such rich experience watching the bioluminescence and swimming with it at Hog Island. I don't know, there was such a, like an open, everyone became so open, and I don't know, I guess it's hard to summarize, because even from early on, everyone had just socialized really positively. The discourse and interpersonal relationships were incredible. People were, you know, we had stuffed three strangers in a tent with one another, and two, and then a couple sets of twos in with one another, and there, and you know, no one ever, everyone got their own personal space on the islands, but I think had a really nice time communing around the campfire and in tents and whatever. But yeah, so I think that ultimately it went from, well, I don't know what we're doing, to I love these people and these are my people and I don't want to leave. And that was really in beautiful.
Yeah. That's very cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was cool. And I actually just saw three of them last night.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because Matea is holding a couple of rehearsals for some of our artists are performing in a dance that she's choreographing. And yeah, we all got together for a drink in Belfast, and it's... And as much as I had to be the leader in the trip, and so there was a little element of, like, I had to remove myself. Like, I'm not part of these deep conversations. And, you know, we had incredible campfire cooking and conversation. And we had artist talks every night from Tuesday through Saturday, where two people would present their portfolio of work. And we're passing around iPhones and trying to explain everything and why they got there to the Village Canoe and what they were thinking about for this trip. But... it just made me think, like, I still don't even know these people in as deep as they got to know each other over that time. And it's really great to see people afterward and now know that, you know, we can get to know each other further and out of that context, but with that context as the backdrop for why we kind of know each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. Yeah. See three of them and chat about the project. But yeah, it was really enlightening. It was way better. This trip was a grander success and way more epic than I could have expected in so many more ways than just, you know, landscape nirvana. Because, you know, you go on these trips and you're like, oh man, I'm going to see the most lush, wild landscape. Or that's, I think, what, like canoeing on the interior, you're like hoping for this total stark change. But what I think I got out of it, and I think a lot of these artists got, is that, you know, this is a river and a setting in a backyard that A, they're unfamiliar with, or they're familiar with but don't know in this depth, and to experience something that you are familiar with in a positive, enriching way is, I think, the thing. Because this wasn't, we're not going to go like track moose, and we didn't intend to find wildlife, but between the fresh deer scat and the guillemots and all the, you know, the, I don't know, all the critters on the island and the bird watching. I mean, we had a couple of bird enthusiasts and it was neat. It was neat to see how people so vitalized by the setting.
So we talked a little bit before, like the premise of this trip sounds quite simple.
Right.
Canoe with a bunch of artists, make something.
Have a show.
But I imagine there to be like a lot of moving parts and a lot of layers to this. So if you could just describe some of the aspects of planning that people might not think of. Some of the sort of like behind the scenes things that you did or that people in this area did to like make this trip possible.
Oh man, where to begin? Well, so many people lifted up this project and touched this project. So many individuals and organizations touched this project in ways that I had maybe hoped for, but couldn't have really dreamed of. And you know, we got canoes loaned to us by Mike and BJ Mayberry. Our paddles, some PFDs, our med kit, and some other essentials, in addition to early on guidance, came from Alex Strong of Aperon Expeditions, who lives right here in Orrington, who helped. I mean, my wife was like the invisible hand that helped make this trip probably possible. And unfortunately, she couldn't go on it, but Amanda was there. She was our shuttle driver at the outset. You know, we had to figure out the logistics, getting people to and from Nibizen to the launch at this salmon club, and then from Brooklyn back to Nibizen to then move the canoe trailer back to Brooklyn to then load it back up and bring it back here to Brewer and then drop off all the gear. And Main Sport Outfitters early on offered PFDs on loan, and last minute Hurricane Island Outward Bound came through and donated or loaned us their expedition dry bags that they use for their programming. We had a cooler loaned by a friend, Garrett. The apprentice shop loaned us all of our water jugs, our poop buckets, our another set of coolers, tarps from Terry, and our kitchen dry boxes. So all of our outfitting came from people who do this for a living or people who are engaged in this process. Not to mention the fact that I went around and tried to source all the food. I thought it'd be really interesting with a little bit of food budget to try and source all the food directly from the counties that touch the places we'll be paddling by. So that would have meant Waldo County, Penobscot County, and Hancock County. And over the past couple months, I've been like sourcing directly from those farmers and producers. And so while I had a budget originally for six people and myself for 10 days, because we had 32 people apply and it was more overwhelmingly positive than I could have expected, I added on a second boat, which costs money to hire the boats and cost more money to feed those four extra people for 10 days. Immediately my budget went from looking good, pretty good, to looking a little lean. And so then I was asking the community for donations, gleaning opportunities, work trade, or just seconds that I could put up and process. And we had so many farms and producers donate things. Doralina Farm, Chase Farm, 44 North fueled our whole trip with coffee from Roasted the day I picked it up 4 days before we left. And we had meat from Roaring Lion Farm. We had Micah from Atlantic Holdfast Seaweed Company donated a bunch of seaweed, which at the outset doesn't sound like a necessary part of a canoe trip, but between his soup mix, the dulse, we actually left our salt for the expedition at Nibizen the first night. And so, but we had this huge bag, you know, probably a half a pound or a pound of dulse. And so we actually cooked with seaweed, like harvested from Isle of Ho area, the entire 10 days, in addition to soup mix, in addition to having like seaweed jerky. You know, we had a couple vegetarians on the trip, and so I didn't have as much in the way of like meat every day for lunch, but I thought it would have been good to have like salami or meat sticks or something. But turns out we had seaweed jerky all the time, kelp jerky. All these farmers and producers, in addition to those who gave me wholesale pricing or discounts on things, Energy Gems and Sunset Farms and Brooksville, I drove all around for weeks acquiring and going to the Belfast market every week and talking with people. I went to the Camden market, Brazen Baking donated tons of seconds of their flatbread crackers. And there's an amazing amount of support that I found from friends and or former coworkers or just people in the community who are willing to help uplift the project. And so I went through a lot, and probably 85-90% of the food was sourced directly from the hands of the people who either grew it or produced it, and all from within mostly these counties. We had a few other, I realized that the architecture of this idea of food only from these counties is challenging. It was more important to me to source nourishing food that if it was from the next county over in Knox or wherever Whitefield was or Pittsfield, that finally I could let down my either ego or pride or whatever, like the initial architecture of that idea, and just think that I'm still having food sourced from less than 100 miles away. And so everyone loved it. That was one of the things that I think people took away a lot on this trip. The artists, some people were like, this is better than I eat in my own life every day. I mean, we had every day at lunch, I made kraut and kimchi and pate, and we had, and all from ingredients. I can list you know, every ingredient and how I made it. And I put up a ton of tomato jams from Doralina Farms, beautiful little sun golds and cherries and valentines. And we had, and Mofka Heritage Orchard donated nearly like a bushel of apples early.
The funniest thing for me to see was a crate of apples getting up. Yeah.
We had an apple box full of apples uncovered just for like nearly half the trip. And I think people were wondering, why the heck are we carrying a crate of apples? And, you know, and so then they had a bunch of them had like that worm that comes through or whatever. But ultimately we had apples every day for snacks. And then at a certain point it was getting, they were getting a little soft. And so we cooked them all down and ended up eating a delicious set of oatmeals and granola, and baked a beautiful apple rye cake on the last night. Between the apples and the resupply, we had two different resupplies where you, Tressa, and my wife Amanda came and helped provide us the food, because definitely the logistics is a thing that I didn't realize how much work, you know, went into it, or I knew how much work went into it, but I just couldn't physically do it all of myself. And so when we ran low or close to out, we needed to resupply twice. So yeah, between figuring out the logistics of just resupply and of putting up all the food in the month leading up to the trip, and then acquiring all the fresh food, it was a lot of work. And then figuring out the logistics, getting people to and fro from Nibezen to the Wooden Boat School, and organizing the formality of having the Wooden Boat School be okay with us land there and have a little potluck at the end, to arranging lunch at the Good Life Center and a small little talk from one of the farmers in residence. There was just a lot of logistics in addition to developing an open call application, and then we had three jury members decide on the applicants, so organizing that, and then accepting and then inviting all of the applicants, and then also having to send the sad email of like the "we regret to inform you" email that I've never had to send before, but still having a really uplifting and positive response to that, and working with the Kindling Fund to make all this happen. And I don't know, I guess between having the open call, setting up an open call, having an open call, choosing people, telling people what they needed to prepare for and do, and then start setting up the logistics of the trip and then executing the trip. And now we have an art show to put on in 2 weeks and in a few weeks. You know, we've just finished one third of the project, and now we have the second third to do, which is host a free public art show in downtown Belfast. And drumming up that energy, firing marketing, and setting up the programming, and then moving this 16 by 40 foot wooden structure from Waterfall Arts down to the waterfront, and then building out a pop-up gallery on the water, and then taking it down 3 days later, and then trying to build a big canoe this winter, and then rinse and repeat and try to figure out a way to hone all the the best practices and dial in some of the systems so that next year we can do this program again with a canoe that we've made on the same river, knowing what we know now, the limits of canoeing from river to sea and what it really means to run an art residency and a canoe expedition all in the same breath. So it's a lot, but it's good. You know, it's been like the biggest project I've been involved in to date, and it's been incredibly rewarding. It was really challenging and anxiety-inducing in months leading up, and even the first few days of the trip was just frenetic and harried feeling, and didn't really have my legs under me. But yeah, now it's after having such a positive experience and feedback, and oh man, can't wait for the next 5 years.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit more about the the show and like the logistics, so if people want to come check it out,
yeah,
like where they can go and what they can expect?
So people can expect to join us in Belfast on September 27th through the 29th. We are actually having two exhibitions going on at the same time. Waterfall Arts is hosting a small retrospective exhibit in their hallway gallery or hallway corridor gallery. And so on Friday night, the 27th, at 5 o'clock, the opening of Fourth Friday Art Walk in Belfast, we're going to, anyone who wants to informally meet at Waterfall Arts, enjoy the retrospective Village Canoe exhibit. And at 6:30, we're going to host an art walk or a parade through the art walk from Waterfall Arts down Main Street, Belfast, onto the waterfront. At Heritage Park, we're going to have a lantern walk and parade, so open to the community, come join us. And then we're going to have artist introductions and a dance performance. So that'll be from 6:30 to 8 o'clock on Friday night, the 27th. And then Saturday, we'll have Cowboy Camp Coffee at 10 in the morning with a panel discussion with all the artists and myself and Nancy, the guide, along with many of the organizations and outfitters who I mentioned who loaned us a bunch of gear. We're going to talk about our trip and expeditioning in Maine and what that means, just the architecture of expedition and the values learned from. And anyway, people have a chance to meet us and chat with us, panel discussion style, from 10 to 11:30 on Saturday morning, and we'll have a break and there might be some intermittent programming filling the gap. And at 1 o'clock, we're going to have a second dance performance, and then Bennett Kinesny of the Community Work Songs Chorus is going to lead us in a workshop. He and the Work Song Chorus are going to lead a workshop on traditional Quebecois voyageur paddling songs from about 1:15, 1:30 until 3 to 3:30. And then we might even have a live demo of putting a canoe in the water and paddling and singing. And so that's going to be the bulk of the programming. And then on Sunday, we're going to have Paul Finelli from Finelli Boatworks come and lead a canoe paddle making workshop and demo from 11 to 2. And all of this is taking place once we parade down from Waterfall Arts down to the Heritage Park. All the programming is going to take place under the Gothic arches at Heritage Park, which is along the waterfront walking path in downtown Belfast, right there on the water by the Harbor Master. So it's a full weekend of programming. And then Waterfall Arts is actually going to extend the life of the exhibit. So once we take that down that weekend on the 30th or the 1st, we're going to move what we can from the gallery space into Waterfall Arts hallway, and they're going to have that show going from September 27th until November 16th.
Awesome. And is there a cost to any of the workshops or programming over the weekend?
So right now everything is free except for potentially the canoe paddle making workshop. We just developed that a few days ago, and I think it'll either be a suggested donation or a cost for materials, minimal, and you can either donate your paddle to live on in the Village Canoe, or you can potentially take your own home. So we're still working the details out, but we'll definitely have a demo and workshop, and people can stay tuned to the website.
And what is the website? They can learn more about Village Canoe.
You can learn more about Village Canoe at villagecanoe.org, and the program schedule's up there, all the information about all the artists, and my attempt at trying to backlog all the trip imagery and blogging, it will go up there soon. But yeah, villagecanoe.org, and on social media at The Village Canoe. on both on all platforms, Instagram and Facebook related. But yeah, we got a big weekend lined up. And then once we take it down, we got to start building a canoe. So all people interested in helping build a big 30-foot strip canoe in the fur trade style with Maine canoe traditions in mind and in practice, we're going to start engage the third portion of this year's program thanks to a grant through the Belvedere Handcraft Fund and the Maine Community Foundation. We'll start building a canoe. So looking for more funds and potential volunteers to help and boat builders to chime in. There might be a public interactive boat designing element at the show too, so you've got to come down and help us design the river to sea canoe.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add?
My goal is that this just gets people from all over the state into a beautiful town, mostly to just engage with the community, and hopefully that a bunch of these different agencies, organizations, and groups and types of people, you know, you've got paddlers, you've got artists, maybe some citizen scientists, maybe you've got boaters, and you've got I don't know, anyone, families. It's an opportunity to hang out in a great community celebrating art made from the outdoors in the outdoors. I don't know, I can think of no better way to just have a creative weekend of fun and one of the first weekends of fall in Maine. So my hope is that this just sets the groundwork for coming years where people get interested in art making and outdoor experience all in one.
You're listening to WERU 89.9 FM. My name is Tressa Versteg, and you've been hearing about the Village Canoe Art Residency and Canoe Expedition. This program was produced by me, Tressa Versteg, and I'd like to thank all the artists at the Village Canoe for welcoming me into their campsites and for dinner and being willing to share about their experience. So thank you, Chris Battaglia, Sam Costello, Chloe Dubois, Alex Hackett, Amanda Kidshaw, Matea Nils-Andruck, Ali Reed, Gabby Schultz, Paige Spipe, Brian Wasser, and Willow Wildheart. The music in this episode was by Poddington Bear, Kai Engel, Lee Roosevelt, Lobo Loco, and Ariel. Thanks for tuning in. You can learn more about this project at villagecanoe.org.